Now, I wish I could promise that Mike Conti, our boss, that, you know, my podcast downloads are going to be the 11 million that this episode of New Heights has gotten so far on YouTube. Unbelievable. If you missed it, Taylor Swift went on the New Heights podcast with the Kelce Boys, launched a new album, and talked about their relationship really openly and extensively. And within 12 hours, they had over 11 million views on YouTube. It's unbelievable. It's crazy. Again, I wish I could promise Mike Conti we were going to get those types of numbers, but I know my numbers are going to be boosted because my next guest is on, Joe Patrick, with me on the WadeFord.com hotline. And check out his podcast, too. Maybe combine, Joe, we can get to that 11 million number for our downloads compared to Joe Patrick on football and Chris Thomas tonight. Does that equal New Heights? I don't know, but we'll find out. Joe, we got to talk Falcons and Titans. Obviously, we know what happened yesterday at the joint practice with the skirmish. Michael Penix involved. He sounded mature and focused after practice. What did you see out there? How high was that intensity? And do you feel like that was a good, nice look at Michael Penix Jr. leading the way over those 2 days?
I think so. I mean, it's not just the joint practices in terms of evaluating Michael Penix. It's the entirety of the training camp and what we've seen, and just his willingness to push the ball downfield, and then also the effectiveness in doing so. I think it's worth noting, Chris, that for all this talk, you know, I'm sure Falcons fans were tuning in. You know, they've heard this kind of theme consistently over the course of the training camp, that he's obviously pushing the ball deep, and that kind of fits the MO that he had throughout his college career. But I think that what would be surprising to people is the fact that I've only seen him throw one interception this entire training camp in 11-on-11. There have been, I know, like, there was one that he had against the Titans in 7-on-7s that was kind of very similar to that one that Kyle Pitts kind of tipped up in the air in that Giants game, where it was there was a throw slightly behind Charlie Warner, and that he kind of Warner kind of batted the ball up in the air for a Titans player to take away in the end zone. But other than the one that that Michael Penix threw that was intercepted in a red zone drill, I believe it was sometime early last week in that rainy day, I can't recall him throwing another interception. So I think that that's really important context to put in what we've been talking about with him pushing the ball downfield. And then just on that note, to kind of go back to the whole fiasco that ensued on Wednesday. So what started it all was he threw this touchdown pass to Ray McCloud. And to give you some perspective from my vantage point, Chris, I was standing right in front of Ray, like when he was crossing the goal line. And, you know, it was a big play. So I immediately put my head down to take notes on what happened on the play, and to, you know, potentially send out a tweet. And I look up and I just see a massive humanity. I was kind of triggered to look up because I could hear like people start yelling. And I saw Jesse Bates on the field, and he was supposed to be on the other field for context there, but he had got everybody that was on the sideline of the other field that was working kind of spilled onto the field. And even people such as Terry Fontenot, for example, was trying to break things up. And it's not often you hear about one of these fights that happen in a training camp, especially in a joint practice, where the quarterback is basically at the bottom of a dog pile. That's basically what it sounds like to us. I don't know if anybody got that clear of a view of exactly what was happening with Penix during the whole melee, but man, it's a scary situation from an injury perspective. But I think also when you kind of take a step back and you realize, okay, nobody was hurt, everybody was okay. You know, with the way that we saw the Falcons teammates respond to Penix, the way that they appreciated what he had to say about the whole situation afterwards, with Matthew Bergeron and Ray McCloud, for example, kind of retweeting some of the quotes that were out there on Twitter and kind of saying, like, that's my quarterback, that kind of thing. I think we can just kind of take away that it was a constructive exercise from a team bonding standpoint, and kind of having one of those fiery moments that brings the team together. And hopefully that can, you know, build some permanence as we go into the season here.
Here's the thing. Based off of everything you just said, I just think it's worth noting, and I said this to start the show today, we are all on the Michael Penix Jr. hype train, Joe, myself included, leading the charge. Cannot wait. The bread and butter for the Atlanta Falcons, though, Joe, is to run the ball. They will be set up to throw by Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier doing what they need to do on first and second down. So I think, you know, just to, you know, put things into a realistic perspective, could Michael Penix Jr. throw 40 touchdowns this year? Sure. But, Joe, do I think that's the game plan for the Falcons? No, I do not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree because, you know, ultimately I don't think that Penix is going to be one of those guys who has super high volume passing stats in terms of just like having a bunch of attempts per game, in part because, you know, you don't expect this team to really be trailing games where they're in those kinds of shootouts where they do have to kind of rear back and pass it a bunch of times in a row. And that was kind of echoed by Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem Morris earlier in the offseason, even when those guys are first hired, kind of talking about, like, we're building this team as a team that is built to have leads. And that's why they wanted to go out and attract or acquire those pass rushers that they got in the draft, is because they think the teams are going to be passing against them and they can get after them. And then as it pertains to the running backs, you're totally right. And, you know, it's these guys, Bijan and Tyler Allgeier, have completely gone under the radar in this training camp because, you know, there's so much intrigue around Michael Penix and not knowing exactly who he is as a quarterback and what he means for this team and for these pass catchers overall. But you're totally right. I mean, Bijan Robinson, by some metrics, if you look at some of the underlying stuff that you know, the sickos, the analyst sickos like to use, you can argue that Bijan Robinson had one of the best years in terms of running efficiency in NFL history. Now, he did not have the big time runs that limited some of his total numbers, but it's kind of crazy that he did have the numbers that he had, still having had a career long rush of only 38 yards. And when you go back and watch some of the film, Chris, which I've done, I know you've done too, it's amazing to see just the sheer amount of carries that probably should be 0 yard gains, maybe even losses of yards, that he turns into 5 yard pickups, 7 yard pickups, 8 yard pickups. Like, and that's the kind of thing that can just keep the chains moving, keep drives alive, keep the pressure off of a young quarterback like Michael Penix. So I think, you know, these things kind of work hand in hand. And to that point, you know, Zach Robinson has to make sure they work hand in hand by utilizing some play action game in the passing game, which I think he'll be much more willing to do. And I think he's shown so far in training camp, having a quarterback that's able to escape some pressures, and he's willing to have his back turn, as he was not clearly with Kirk Cousins coming off that injury last year. So all these things work hand in hand, but I certainly expect those running backs to have a big year. And if I could just add one more point to this, Chris, I was talking to the running backs coach, Michael Petrie, earlier this week. And I don't know if you remember, but this time last year, the conversation around Bijan was like, all right, let's get back to basics a little bit. Let's do more. He talked about kind of wanting to have more of a Christian McCaffrey style of role in the team, where he's just kind of focused on being a runner and utilizing that to the best extent possible to help the team. And I do think that they are now thinking of different ways that they can use Bijan in terms of how they get him utilizing formations and motions and things like that, and how they can get both of these backs on the field at the same time. And if they're able to use Bijan in some different roles where they can get him in motion going out, getting him split out a little bit, and they can still have Tyler Allgeier in the backfield as a threat to be a ball carrier there, where he himself can also create explosives. In fact, he's been like more of an explosive runner in terms of just the rate in which he creates those explosive runs. I'm talking about like 20 plus yard runs than even Bijan. So, it's really a great tandem that the Falcons have in that backfield, along with an offensive line that can block exactly how they want it. So that's why, I mean, the potential for this offense is as sky high as it is.
What position battles and what guys are you looking out for to stick out on Friday?
Yeah, on Friday, I think it's just more of the same of what we saw in that Lions game. And unfortunately, that game was cut short and for good reason. But, you know, I think that what we didn't get to see there was some players enter the game. We don't know if Braylon Trice, for example, was ever going to enter that game. He did dress and sounded ready to play. I know that he was sounding like before that game that he was going to play. They ultimately held him out, which was surprising because I've seen him rep with, you know, the ones. And it's hard to say what exactly the ones are, because they do such a heavy rotation on that defensive line, that defensive front. Nate Oley's been talking about, like, we don't want these guys in for more than four plays in a row because we want to just be throwing bodies at them. And the Tennessee Titans offensive line, and we're talking about how annoying that is when you're just like, you want to kind of get a feel for a guy. And you just, like, when they're just continuously throwing different players in there, it gets really frustrating, not only because they have different attributes, but obviously they're, you know, just more energized and ready to go when they've had a rest. And so it's going to be, I think, like a big edge room in terms of just the amount of players that they probably keep at that position, Braylon Trice being one of them. But I'm interested to see how that goes. Morgan Fox is another one of those guys that we didn't really get to see a lot of. And that's interesting because I thought he was going to be a pretty significant piece of this team's kind of third down pass rush plan. As kind of a Grady Jarrett light, so to speak, not in terms of what he is overall to the defense, but just in terms of the way that he attacks offensive linemen in those pass rushing situations as being a bit of a gap shooter and somebody who has a track record. So it was interesting that he only came into that game very late on, only got, I think, a couple reps before the game ended up being cut short. So that was an interesting one. And then the other thing, Chris, is that it's gone a little bit under the radar because Younghoe Koo's kind of, I think, locked down the fact that he's going to be the team starting kicker in his training camp kick so far, but he is going to be taking the kicks in this game. And you never know if the dynamic could change if he misses a couple. So I think it will be really important for Falcons fans and the coaching staff to see him go out there and nail whatever kicks they give him.
All right. So a couple more things here before I cut you loose. Crystal ball prediction. Does Kirk play in either of these last two games?
No, I don't think he will. That question hasn't left open, so I could technically be wrong, but I do feel pretty strong, confident in this, that he's not going to play. Raheem Morris kind of said, like, you know, we'll leave it up to him. We'll have a conversation about it. And he said that last year he wanted to get some reps in preseason. And I think it's a different dynamic this year for him because he's not the starting quarterback. So, you know, like there's not the pressure on him to go into that week one game and be ready to perform. So I don't think that he feels the same necessity to get in there. And I got to say, Chris, it's like, listen, I take the point in good faith that you know, you want to show that he's healthy. The Falcons might have an interest in showing that he's healthy. But I don't know what him getting back there and throwing a few footballs for a series or two is really going to show teams that they didn't already know about Kirk Cousins. I just don't know what exactly he can prove other than for him to go out there and, like, run some play action. But I don't think that they would do that in this instance with the backup offensive line for him, which we saw was pretty shaky in that Lions game. So I don't think he's going to play for that reason being that offensive line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I just think owners, GMs, coaches, as we know in the NFL, are obsessive compulsive, to say the least. And maybe the sheer fact of literally watching him just throw a few plays, maybe, I don't know how, you know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. Maybe you know the answer to this. I don't know how much film of other teams, like, do they get? Like, how much have other coaches, GMs, owners have been able to see of Kirk in Flowery Branch the last couple of weeks? I don't know the answer to that.
It's a great point. I believe the Falcons can basically control their film, and I do wonder if they would be willing to share some of the film they have of Kirk Cousins if a team came in and was interested in that. So, but it's a great question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, and I'll be fascinated to see what happens. All right, Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll check in after the game on Monday to recap everything that went down.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football. When we get back, we'll let you hear from Caden Ellis and Chris Blair on stuff that went down yesterday. Then we'll also let you hear from Charlie Warner as he joined the morning shift. So the Falcons talk continues as we hit the 7 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you till 8 o'clock, leading into Corky Kell Classic coverage.